Welcome. In this e-publisher self interview, Richard Riemann takes us on a journey to the theater of the mind, the world of audiobook narration, and discusses the ways in which audiobooks are eclipsing e-books as a dominant form of digital storytelling. We invite you to settle back, relax, and enjoy the journey.
I was just listening to your free audiobook you did for Transcendent Tales.
Oh, yeah. The Unseen, right?
Oh, this is The Voyage to Windward Atoll? Oh,
yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
Oh. Were you just kind of doing that for publicity or?
No, I got paid to do that.
Oh.
You know, that was the. Basically, Adam Train, the author, crowdfunds his books. So he raises money and then pays narrators and does the production himself, turns it into more than just an audiobook. It's, you know, it's more like one of the old radio dramas. And he believes in giving them away and eventually to sell his books. So the audiobooks are kind of a plus to get his name out there.
That's a very interesting approach.
Mm-hmm. He's Australian and he's a great guy, very unusual, though. He comes from the podcasting world, and podcasts are free, and he believes that audiobooks are just long podcasts.
Well, so if he's making a living doing that, that's great.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, eventually crowdfunding runs out. You run out of friends and family, and,
yeah.
You know, it's a tough way to go, but he's building a good reputation.
Right. I was wondering, I saw you have a background in radio, and I'm curious if a lot of your skills and experience from radio have translated well to audiobook narration.
Yes and no. Being comfortable in front of a microphone, yes. But really getting into the voice acting part of it, completely separate world. You know, my first voice teacher told me, you have a very nice voice and you read out loud very well, but that has nothing to do with audiobooks. you can't sound like you're reading out loud very well. So we're going to basically teach you how to act.
Well, it's interesting, yeah, because there's almost a syndrome. I think of it as radio announcer's voice, where it's almost like a pat delivery that is kind of artificial and kind of inflated and doesn't, you hear it a lot on videos that are done for tech companies and things like
right.
that. And how did you deliberately take some courses to sort of break some of the habits you had from radio?
Yeah, I took improv courses, which helped me greatly. Got up on stage at the Voodoo Comedy Playhouse and just winging it and, you know, relaxing and having fun and, you know, learning how to get, you know, free from the words. And I've worked on voices, character voices for, you know, some of the books I've done. So it's a different world because I do fiction as well as nonfiction. But I love it.
Well, I was reading some of your book this morning, too, and I was struck by one section where you were talking about whether someone should leap into doing their own audiobook narration. And it was a little bit suggesting that if you didn't have some background in drama or some voice training or that type of background that maybe you wouldn't be too well suited for audiobook narration. And I understand, you know, there is a tremendous learning curve really from, you know, just as you said, just being able to just read well and actually being able to dramatically perform a book.
I've worked with authors in the studio. It's one of the things I do is bring authors into a local recording studio here in Denver. And some of them are very good, but they have public speaking backgrounds. So they're more than just an author with an expertise. They really understand how you're really going to be in somebody's head, you know, in headphones most of the time. And so it's an intimate conversation usually, and not, you know, like what you were saying about radio people talking to everybody out there. You know, it's a different experience.
Yeah. I was wondering this morning, I was sitting here and the rain was pelting down on my metal roof. And I'm thinking, you have your own home recording setup that you use most of the time, right?
Yes. I started out like most voiceover and audiobook narrators do, using my walk-in closet, which is great for sound dampening. And, you know, it's inside the building, so you don't get as much external noise. But even that only goes so far. I was lucky enough to find a whisper room booth, a 5x7 recording booth, and that's what I use now.
Oh, so that's like something set into one of your rooms that you can sort of retreat into. And
yes, it's a very large gray booth with, you know, it's almost completely soundproof. But what I found out is that even a booth, you really have to put the acoustic treatments in there, tiling, that type of thing. Otherwise, you sound like you're just in a big box. So it's a combination of the acoustic treatment plus the sound deadening.
Oh, I see.
But it works out well.
Do you do your own audio production as well?
Yes, I, you know, basically provide services to do the editing part. I've learned, you know, the different techniques for using noise removal. So if people record somewhere else, I can help them with their recordings to bring them up to Amazon's ACX specs for Audible and iTunes, because as you probably know, the noise floor has to be very low in the background. You can't have a lot of very loud noises, distractions, dogs barking in the background. So all of that, you know, hopefully you treat that up front where you don't have those issues coming in. But there's software available to really help you cut down on background noise and various clicks, pops, and very loud breaths. Some of the authors that I've worked with sound like they need an oxygen tank.
Well, that's kind of interesting, because it seemed to be two different approaches to that. One is that you have all of the breaths edited out, where it almost sounds like somebody isn't breathing.
Yeah.
And the other is where, you know, there is breathing, as, you know, a person naturally speaks. Do you favor one approach over the other, or somewhere in between?
You can't take out all the breaths. It sounds strange when you do that. You know, people breathe naturally, but what happens is when, especially if somebody gets nervous, they start going, and the breaths are loud and unnatural. So what you do in the editing process is you either insert a soft breath where the loud one was, or you put in some room tone so there's not a big, you know, dead silence in between. But you really should leave breaths in, because after a while, you don't even notice they're there. You don't notice people breathing when they talk to you. You won't notice it after a while, when, you know, the narrator is reading the book out loud. The breaths just seem natural.
Yeah.
And in fiction, you have to leave them in, because they become part of the character. You know, whether the character's in a situation where his heart is pounding and the breaths and, you know, the pace speeds up and the breaths get a little louder, that's very natural.
Right. Now, I was curious, you have just finished your book, which is about to be released this week, right? Or early next week?
Next Monday, that's right, March 7th.
Was the experience of writing a book easier or more difficult, do you think, than the audiobook narration work you do?
I would rate it as more difficult, just because of the amount of research that I needed to do to get everything correctly. You can fall into the trap of, you know, ready, set, because you do so much research that actually, you know, getting it down on paper in your own words, it was a big challenge for me. I'm so comfortable, you know, in front of a microphone and talking. But I've been an author, as I wrote in my book, since I was in second grade. I was a professional writer. I got paid to write stories because I realized if I put my classmates' names in them, they would pay me a nickel to read it. So that's how I got my comic book money. So I started out early, and it's been a lot of fun getting back into the author world. I'm already working on my second book called The Audiobook Revolution, which really goes in depth on how audiobooks are expanding so quickly to be a part of everyone's life more than people realize, mainly because people are now listening to audiobooks over their smartphones. The newest generation is used to listening to podcasts and other long-form programs, over their phones, and that's what an audiobook is. They're very comfortable with, you know, the experience of now listening to an audiobook, not just the way it used to be, was, you know, in a car was the most popular way to listen to audiobooks. Now it's becoming a much more personal thing, and it's growing rapidly. 20% growth in audiobooks last year.
Yeah, I've seen, I think, one figure that was even higher, was like 34% in the total sales over last year from the...
Right, that's worldwide. Germany, for the first time in November, they published the stats. There were more audiobooks sold in Germany in November of last year than ebooks. It is really growing rapidly. It's a $2 billion plus industry right now.
Do you think we're already at the point where the need for good voice talent and producers is outstripping the available resources that are out there?
Not really, because there are so few audiobooks published compared to the number of paperbacks and hardcover and ebooks out there. The figures are about 12% of books are made into audiobooks. So there is a huge number of books that should be audiobooks, that should be new revenue streams for their authors, but they just don't know how to produce an audiobook, how to make money doing it, how to get a good narrator, if they want to narrate it themselves, how to do that. So that's exactly why I thought, writing The Author's Guide to Audiobook Creation would help grow this industry by educating authors as to how it can be done, how it can be done very easily in a lot of cases, all about not just the Amazon experience through ACX, the Audiobook Creation Exchange that they created to make books available on Audible and iTunes, but also what's beyond the Amazon opportunity, the larger studios, the medium-sized studios, the ability to go to the newly created Authors Republic, which is kind of the Smashwords of audiobook publishing, because it's aimed at putting audiobooks everywhere that ACX does not. Internationally, putting them in libraries, making them available at Barnes & Noble, giving you the opportunity to have CDs if you're an author and give copies, sell copies of your own audiobook at your events. All those things can be done that an exclusive contract with Amazon's ACX prohibits.
So how do you advise... I saw a little section where you were talking a bit about the pros and cons of ACX. And the whole lock-in idea of having to offer an exclusive. I mean, how would you weigh the pros and cons of that working, strictly through ACX?
Well, ACX, Amazon owned, they do make it easy to get an audiobook produced, to find a narrator, getting auditions for you, all of that. They have a wonderful help section for authors. They make the process, fairly straightforward. But you do have to sign up for a 7-year exclusive agreement with them. That's a long time. And you are also limited. You get 40% royalty share of the sales price of your book, if you pay a narrator or if you narrate it yourself. You have to share those royalties with a narrator in half, 50-50. The narrator produces the book for you entirely, so that's great, but you're only getting 20% royalties if you go that route. So you can't get around the fact that Amazon, Audible, iTunes are at least 80% of the marketplace for audiobook sales. They are the 800 or 900 pound gorilla of the industry, just as they are on the print side. So if you really want the easy experience, most direct experience, then going through Amazon's ACX is the way to go. If you want to reach other marketplaces, like I said, internationally, especially, you really need to go outside of Amazon's ACX. And that's why Authors Republic, which is a division of audiobooks.com, which has been around for 20 years, and is one of the major publishers of audiobooks and distributors of audiobooks, they've come up with a different plan, which is pay 35% royalties. There's no option for royalty share. You do have to pay a narrator, or you do have to produce your own audiobook yourself. But that way, like I said, you can get it into libraries, you can get it into Barnes and Noble, Nook, Scribd, lots of different distribution places. You can sell it on your own website, without having to, pay the 60% royalty share to Amazon. So there are advantages and disadvantages of going, either way. If you go non-exclusive with Amazon, it's important to note, your top royalty share falls to 25%, not 40%. So it will cost you in sales through Amazon's ACX if you go non-exclusive. So it's a call to make. I'm putting my book up on both, the audiobook version of my book. I've got a couple authors who want to make sure their book is available internationally. So we're going that route, and I'll find out more about what comparatively you're going to make going with both Author Republic and Amazon, rather than Amazon's ACX exclusively. But like I said, 80% or more of the audiobook sales come through Amazon's ACX.
Yeah, and that I'm sure is very tempting to a lot of people, regardless of some of the other trade-offs. Tell me a little bit more about your coaching and training that you do. I understand you carry a lot of that out through either Skype or the other service you mentioned.
Basically, I provide several services, which is I can narrate your book for you and produce it for you. But I'm only one person, so that is rather limiting. I have coaching students, both in person and over Skype, in which I actually train some of my fellow narrators on the author side, and that's really where I focus most of my efforts. I make it available to authors to have me be their mentor for their audiobook from beginning to end. I walk them through the ACX process. I find the right auditions for them so they can choose the right narrator. I listen to the files to make sure they're up to technical specs, and from beginning to end, walk them through the entire process of getting an audiobook produced, because authors don't have time to learn something else about such as audiobook production in many cases. So I offer a mentoring service that way. Plus, I bring authors either into the local recording studio and record them. I direct them through the headset, or I use basically the technology that's out there over the internet to do it remotely, which is Source Connect now. And you can get broadcast quality audio over the internet. Plus, I can be in their ear while they're recording, so I can help them. And that is something that is brand new out there. Of course, acoustically, they need a quiet setup on their end. I recommend a couple microphones that work well, and most of those recordings need sound treatment, audio treatment, to reduce the noise in the background, that type of thing. But this way, I can really have any author, around the world, record their book over the internet, and I have it edited and produced and put it up on Amazon, ACX, Audible, and iTunes.
Sounds great. Is that becoming a bigger part of your business then, or would you prefer to be spending more time, I guess, doing the narration yourself?
Well, the narration is the fun part. I mean, last year I was a cowboy, I was a pirate, I was a bootlegger, I was a pilot shot down in a B-17 bomber over Europe. I was six aliens, two monsters. I mean, that is the fun part of the business. But audiobooks take a lot of time to produce. I find that helping authors create their own audiobooks or find the perfect narrator for their story is rewarding too. And I'm starting to head more and more in that direction, especially with, my book out there, to teach authors how to produce their audiobook, how to make money producing their audiobook. And that, I think, is the growing part of my business right now.
Well, you had one piece of advice in your book that kind of caught my attention. I thought it was an excellent tip, and it was about recommending that people don't try to do dialects if they're not good at it, or even try to do wildly different voices to separate characters, but just to just maybe change tempo, change the approach, change the type of reading, the rhythm, to distinguish different voices, which I imagine that's a common mistake. A lot of people try to venture beyond their own natural abilities, and it winds up coming out fairly badly.
Yes, unless you have training through a voice acting coach or a dialect coach or are very familiar and speak that language, I mean, you understand very quickly that you're not going to sound perfect. So what you want is a flavor of an accent. If you're going to do German, it's mostly going to be up here if you're going to do German. If you're going to do Russian, all of a sudden you start to go down here and you become Russian. But it's not going to be perfect. It's just going to be a flavor of a character. If you're going to do voices, the best thing to do is not to try to imitate somebody, but just get a flavor of that character. When I had to do a wizard, I looked at Harry Potter. And I saw John Hurt in that scene where Harry's buying his wand. And, I tried to become that type of character because it had to be a wizard. So I went, "Harry, so good to see you. You know, I gave your parents their wands." So you learn to just relax and take these voices and become those characters as best you can. The most characters I've had in a book, I had to do, I believe, almost 30 different voices in one book that I did. Some of them were aliens. So they had to come up with different alien voices. So that's a challenge. But it's a lot of fun. I'm far from the record holder. Jim Dale, when he did one of the Harry Potter books, did hundreds of voices. And the narrator of, some of the other books that are coming out now, how they can do that is just incredible. But to get back to common mistakes, men think that women should sound like this. They raise their voice and they're doing this. Yeah. And it's like, oh, my God. No, you have to have a flavor of the character. If she is warm and sincere, all of a sudden your voice becomes warm and sincere. You're not imitating a woman. You're just playing her tempo, her character, a little softer. It doesn't have to be that, jarring. And it's the same way for women doing male voices. If they try to do this, have every character sounding down here, exactly. It just sounds really, really phony. And what you're after is just something easy, something, where you're in your head, you're thinking, what is this person like? And you try to do a voice that matches the actual character of the person rather than, imitating a woman or, trying to do a quote, a voice, unquote. So that's really what you have to keep in mind, is that less is more when it comes to character voices.
Is that hard to teach? Do you find that a big stumbling block for your students?
If somebody, and that's why I recommend improv, if someone is open to, getting into the theater of the mind, understanding that, the characters come from within you, but also from the words that are on the written page. You try to find as much about a character as you can. You're going to come from your own experience. If you've heard a lot of cowboys and cowboy movies and they all talk like this, then you're going to start sounding like that when you do a Texan cowboy. And you have to just be open to the fact that you're, as I said, not imitating somebody in particular. You're trying to get that character's feelings out. And what I have people do is I have them record voices, just snippets of the voices, and make notes about them. If there's somebody they know talks a certain way that fits, then that character is Scott. Okay, you write down it's Scott's voice. Or if you've seen somebody, like I said, John Hurt, on TV or in a movie, you're thinking, okay, well, that's that voice. And if your character shows up once in chapter 2 and then comes back in chapter 25, you've got a reference point for that character. So you can go back to it and listen again and go, oh, yeah, that's right. That was Scott's voice. So I can do that, but it helps to have a little acting background, a little public speaking background, a little radio background, entertainers, that type of thing.
Right.
That helps a lot.
Do you have any favorite narrators or mentors that you've worked with over the years?
Well, I studied under Sean Pratt. Sean has done over 850 audiobooks.
Oh, my gosh.
He's amazing. He's been doing this for a while. And he is definitely one of my favorites for the versatility that he offers, fiction, nonfiction. So I definitely learned a lot from Sean. Pat Fraley is another voice acting teacher, not particular audiobook person, but character voices. He's incredible. When it comes to the narrators themselves, there are so many that are great to listen to. Jim Dale, who I mentioned, did the Harry Potter series.
Right.
Simon Vance, Scott Brick, Barbara Rosenblatt is wonderful. She does a lot of audiobooks. And if you're going to narrate audiobooks or narrate your own book, it really is advisable to listen to audiobooks. A lot of people go into this and never listen to audiobooks, and they don't understand the difference between reading out loud and really getting into the character of those words to tell a story. Because it's all about storytelling, and it's the best storytellers who sound the best narrating audiobooks.
Do you think there's totally different approach you need to take to be able to do certain types of business titles, whether they be, management advice or there's whole schools of different types of nonfiction. I'm just wondering, you mentioned you've done some in that area. How do you approach nonfiction titles differently, I guess, in doing fictional works?
Well, you understand that nonfiction books are still stories. You're going to have fewer voices, but you will have a different approach of voice. You're going to start out with the announcer voice. It'll be in there. Chapter one, learning how to do this well.
Mm.
And then you go into learning how to do this well is important because, you have a second voice going in there, the storyteller voice. And the most common thing that authors do mistakenly, they go too fast. The pacing, is extremely fast. They're familiar with the words, so they're kind of rolling through it. They really need to slow down, understand that what you're trying to do is make sure that your listeners are absorbing the information that you're giving them. So the pacing has to be a little different. I'm from the Midwest, so I naturally talk a little slowly. But I lived in New York for a while, so I know how they talk and how you really. And the speed is something that you have to keep in mind, because with audiobooks, people are doing other things while they're listening to audiobooks. They're not usually just sitting there listening to your audiobook. They're doing other things. They're multitasking. So to get their attention, you're really going to have to communicate extremely well. Nonfiction I enjoy doing because usually, especially what I look for, not just business books, but memoirs, autobiographies, that type of nonfiction, those are truly stories also, and I really enjoy those.
So you also do voiceover work, narration for videos and commercials and things, or is that not
I started out doing narrations and documentaries. I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I did some for the National Park Service, for Health and Human Services, that type of thing, as well as I did some telephone prompts, press one for sales, press two for customer service, that type
right,
of thing.
Yeah.
There are so many opportunities out there in the voiceover world, but I found that I really loved the experience of telling stories and doing audiobooks. So that really is my focus now.
Do you have a timetable in place for your audiobook revolution release?
It's going to take me won't be done and out probably until the end of the year. It takes that long. But there's so much happening right now. The new 2016 model cars, some of them have built-in audiobook apps. through Audible and other places where you can listen to audiobooks in your car just like you're listening to music without any thing additionally. And that's really because it's all moving to digital. Only 5% of audiobooks being produced right now are on CD. So it's 95% digitally produced audiobooks out there, either for download or for streaming. And the technology is moving quickly to make it so simple to hear audiobooks that in the next 2, 3 years, you will see such a growing number of audiobooks being produced out there, and the demand for them will grow. Because authors don't understand that, I mean, this is an additional revenue stream for already created materials. Some of the top authors out there, like Stephen King and Neil Gaiman, are just aghast at the fact that authors don't have audiobooks produced. And we're not just talking, the famous ones and the ones that are narrated in Hollywood and the major publisher studios. Self-publishing audiobooks. There are fewer competitors out there. If you're a science fiction writer, there are fewer science fiction audiobooks available. So you can sell a lot of audio versions of your book because more people will find it as an audiobook. So there are some great things and great reasons why almost every book, except, photography and highly illustrated books and textbooks, almost every book should have an audiobook version. And once people find out that they can get it produced for almost no money up front, and then, share the royalties with a narrator slash producer, they can see that it's a passive revenue stream, for something they've already created.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time. Thanks very much, Richard. Take care.
Thanks, Lee. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening. We hope you'll join us for the next interview in this ongoing series.